Welcome to the 109th episode of the Nerdstravaganza podcast, where we're all player characters and 20s come naturally. I'm Tom.
I'm Eric.
And I'm Brian.
And in case that badly delivered gaming reference didn't give you a clue as to who our guest is tonight, we will be welcoming once again one of our favorite guests, Brian Dalrymple, proprietor of our number one gaming haunt, the Adventure Game Store, who is coming to us for the second time, hot on the heels of the Origins Game Fair. But before we commence with what will no doubt be an excellent interview with Brian, let's give you a little pre-adventure backstory with our Weekly Geekly, a Geekly Weekly update. Eric the Elf, you go first, sir. What have you been up to pre-adventure this week?
Well, as our listeners know, I missed out last week because I have been on a bit of a southeastern adventure, bit of a road trip. Took me through, I realized it was all cities that start with A. It was Atlanta, Aiken, South Carolina, and Asheville, North Carolina. I don't know if there was any reason for that. That's just kind of how it happened. I don't know if maybe the South likes to use A's more so that they're earlier on in the city phone book. But, yeah, I mean, it was mostly family visits. The one benefit of it is two out of those three towns, which are Atlanta and Asheville, have some of the best vegetarian food on the planet, specifically Asheville. I always come back about 8 to 9 pounds heavier, and this time was no exception. Since I've been back, though, it's been a lot of Mario Kart, and I finally, it was long overdue, traded in a very early iPad and upgraded to the iPad Air. And here's the thing. It doesn't do anything the other iPad couldn't do, for the most part. It just does everything better.
So it's literally just an upgrade on the same concept, a much better version of what you already had.
Yeah, the display is better, the processor is faster, everything seems to run a heck of a lot smoother, the cameras are better, and it was long overdue. My old one was getting laggy.
Well, that sounds like the textbook definition of an upgrade, so congratulations, yeah. Sir. I am glad you upgraded.
Yeah, I don't even try to hide my Apple fandom anymore. I really don't. It's pretty bad.
It hardly puts you in poor company. A lot of people like Apple products, myself included. I am a mixed household of Android and Apple products, but I do appreciate what Apple puts out there. Anything else?
That's about it for me.
Okay. Brian the Bugbear, you are up next, sir. What is your Weekly Geekly, Geekly Weekly Bugbear-related update?
My big... geekly activity last week was the free RPG day. I participated at the Adventure Game Store, but it was worldwide. I think like five or six of the stores in our area did it, which I've done in the past, just like Free Comic Book Day. I would go, you know, visit here and visit there and talk to everybody and see what everybody was doing. But I decided to specialize this year. I stayed at AGS and got involved in a, let me do the math, 6 hour long Fate game. That was quite a blast. Fate is a role playing game with, less dice and more storytelling. So that was a little bit different, kind of fun. And, what a variety of misfits our party had. Always, a pleasure to see people thrown together who have completely different styles of role playing, try to role play to the same agenda.
So you're not referring to the characters, you're referring to the players in this case.
Well, however the characters take shape, because yeah, it was wild.
Well, 6 hours worth of wild, so must have been worth sticking around.
Sure.
Was that the highlight of your week? Anything else?
That was it.
Okay, cool. Things have been fairly mundane in my neck of the woods out here in Seattle where I'm at present. I don't think it's very good grammar, but whatever. Playing some Kingdom Hearts still on the PlayStation 3, playing some Disney Magical World on the 3DS, slogging through Clone Wars. I was starting to like it, and then Darth Maul came back as a half-spider. Yikes. Why? Oh, why? Did they bring that character back? That I can't accept that some purportedly good content was scrapped from the expanded universe when it comes to sequels, but the utter garbage they're shoveling down my throat in this Clone Wars series has been canonized. I just can't accept it. And the Darth Maul thing is the absolute worst offense. My God. Wow, that was a mini rant. I didn't mean for it to be. So Clone Wars.
The funny part about that is that they probably brought him back after going, okay, you know, we've really been just sticking it to the fans. We should really give them something they want. And they all talk about how they wish Darth Maul had stuck around. So let's bring back Darth Maul. And then someone was like, but it's still a show for kids. Let's make him have a spider.
The thing is, what made Darth Maul cool is he had all this potential and it was cut short and you're left with like a certain longing. It would have been cool if he'd stuck around. But I didn't want him to come back with a stupid spider body. I mean, that was just dumb. Eric, you've seen this, yes?
I have seen that episode because someone, when they were really pushing the fact that, like, Darth Maul returns, I was like, okay, I have to watch that. I want to see what they do. Yeah.
It's terrible. Brian, have you not seen it?
What else could you expect from the guy that had to have more lightsaber than more legs?
Right, he has twice as many legs and twice as many lightsabers.
Thankfully, each of his little spider legs didn't itself have a lightsaber. And he does lose the spider legs in exchange for some slightly less ridiculous looking robot legs, which also thankfully do not sport lightsabers. So dumb. Anyway, Star Wars rant out of the way. Let's see, you did a little arcade gaming at a GameWorks arcade up here, won some GameWorks yo-yos by playing some Redemption games, which I'm normally not a fan of, but they had a really cool Bejeweled one, which I played for quite a while. Went with a couple of friends of mine, and we combined all of our tickets to get some yo-yos and other trinkets from the store. Got a new mic. I don't know if you can hear the change in quality, all the background noise hopefully eliminated. That's some podcasting news. Hope you guys appreciate my expenditure for your entertainment. And finally, and this is kind of Mac-related and I think pretty nerdy, the trackpad on my circa early 2011 MacBook Pro has been going haywire. I think I've given it one too many drinks. So, you know, there is this legitimate criticism of the sort of Mac ecosphere, which is that people, and Apple encourages this thinking, think that their iDevices are these black boxes that cannot be opened, cannot be tinkered with, cannot be fixed. And this couldn't be more false, especially in the case of the computers. There's a website I go to called ifixit.com. They've got step-by-step guides on how to fix pretty much anything that goes wrong with any electronic device you have, and they let you order the parts. I ordered a new trackpad. It came beautifully packaged. I was expecting it just to be thrown in like a shipping envelope. No, these guys are pros. They support you. They make it feel like a legitimate thing to fix your own devices, and that's the way it should be. So I'm really psyched, looking forward to, after this episode, ripping my laptop apart and throwing in this new trackpad, ifixit.com. Check them out. That is my solid endorsement. And that's pretty much it. Kind of more of an update than I intended to give. Sorry to beat you guys up with that for so long. But I think with all that out of the way, we can jump right into our interview with Brian. I know we're all looking forward to it. So what do you say, guys? Should we get it going?
Yeah, let's kick it off.
Okay, here we go. Okay, we are joined once again by one of our favorite guests, Brian Dalrymple of the Adventure Game Store, one of our favorite gaming haunts, and also a pretty big luminary in the gaming community, at least in our estimation.
Oh, no way. But thank you for having me back, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah. You're joining us live from the Adventure Game Store. Is that correct?
That's right. From the Dragon's Lair back room here at the Adventure Game Store. We have a game going on out front, so I apologize for any of the background noise.
That's all right. The Dragon's Lair is the very room in which we game. It is the very well-appointed gaming den in the back of the store, and we very much enjoy gaming there. I'm kind of jealous. I wish I could do my show from there a lot of the time. But welcome. I'm sure I speak for everybody when I say it's good to have you back, and I know you have got a lot to share with us. We had you on last year post-Origins, and we're not able to throw you very many questions that you couldn't answer. I know our host, Brian, was able to stump you with the Drake question, I think. But
yeah, I actually had to go back and look. I thought I had missed something while I was at the show. I thought I had covered everything last year. And it's like, wow, Drake. But it turns out, of course, that Drake was not actually at Origins last year.
Okay.
So I think I was okay there.
And you mentioned pre-show you were pretty busy this year. So anything that you might have missed this year, we'll chalk up to that, right?
Yep, I tried to get around it as much as I could, but it was a very busy show for me this year. I really only got about a day and a half in the hall, but that's because I volunteer for GAMMA, the trade association that runs the show, and they had me pretty busy for the first 4 days.
And were you involved in a GAMMA capacity last year, too, or not as much?
I was, but turns out there was a lot more stuff going on this year, because this year I joined the Academy of Adventure Gaming Arts and Design this year, which is something I traditionally stayed away from. It's a committee of GAMMA that is in charge of the Origins Awards, which is the reason why there's an Origins. And in the past, it had always been very political and somewhat dysfunctional. And some members of the board, some friends of mine in the industry, asked me to provide some input and maybe kind of help steer things around a little bit and contribute so that we can organize them a little bit better and hopefully improve them. And I think we were able to do that.
Excellent. So in among the other things, are you going to be able to share award winners with us tonight?
Yes. Well, there's a lot of categories. Not all of them are necessarily things that maybe your listeners are going to have an interest in, but we'll certainly talk about the big ones.
Okay, cool. Before we get to that, Brian, Eric, do you have any burning questions? Otherwise, I'm going to ask some introductory questions to let Brian kind of take the floor.
Well, let's go ahead and dive right in, I think, and we'll jump in as we see fit. Because okay. I'm curious of myself, so...
Yeah, too right. many questions. It wouldn't be a fun thing. It'd just be like a grilling.
Okay. In that case, Brian, we will kind of turn over the floor to you to kind of give you free rein. We'll jump in with our questions here and there, but I will kind of motivate things by asking the very first thing I wonder about most conventions of any kind. How was the attendance?
Attendance was up. We were up about 10% almost this year, which we were very happy with. Origins is the second largest gaming convention in North America after Gen Con. And we had about 13,000 almost attendees this year, which is about a 9% increase. But the really nice thing to see was that our turnstile count was over 37,000. And I guess to explain what the difference between unique attendees and turnstile is, when you have an event, like when Gen Con reports that they had over 100,000 people attending last year, that's a turnstile number. That means that they count each attendee each day. So if an attendee is coming to the convention and they're staying for 4 days, they get counted four times. And Gen Con just has had explosive growth over the last 5 years, and Origins has had kind of modest growth. But I was really happy to see we had really significant numbers in our turnstile numbers, which means our attendees on average are staying for the whole show, which is great. We had a little over 37,000 turnstile with 13,000 unique, which was pretty much right in line with our goals for the show.
Impressive. Congratulations on hitting your goals. And I guess with that preliminary question out of the way, give us some highlights. What stole the show this year or what?
Well, so we had the revamped Origins Awards, which I talked about briefly. The Origins Awards are the reason why there's an Origins. The Origins Awards started in 1975, and they recognize the... They recognize excellence in game design, and they're there to honor designers and publishers that contribute really great products to our industry and to make people aware of them so that hopefully they can get access to and play some of these really great games. So the Origins Awards ceremony was held on Saturday night. This is not this past Saturday, but a week prior. And Elena Huffman, who was our media guest of honor at the show, you may know her from Supernatural or a bunch of other sci-fi shows and I think CW shows that she's done. She plays Abaddon on Supernatural. She hosted the ceremony, and I have the winner's list right here, so I'm going to go ahead and pull this up. All right, so the big categories, the ones that everybody really pays close attention to. Origins, half of the events at Origins are tabletop board gaming events. And table board gaming and card gaming events. We have a little over 4,000 events at the show. So there's a lot of attention that gets paid to board games and card games at the show. It's kind of how the show really got started. The Origins Awards, in fact, began pretty much as board game awards. They started out as combined with the Charles S. Roberts Awards. Charles Roberts was the founder of the Avalon Hill Game Company. And in 1975, they started to do awards for games, and those were the Origins Awards. The Roberts Awards and the Origins Awards split off from each other in the 80s. The Origins Awards has a history of some contention and controversy. And the year that they decided to split off was no exception. The award for best historical board game was given to a game that was questionably historical, kind of not really historical, and certainly not a traditional counter and hex strategy game, which would be what the awards had been honoring up to that point. So the kind of hardcore grognard wargamers decided they were going to split the awards off. And we have the Origins Awards, which cover most of the types of games that you'll find in my shop. And the Roberts Awards are awarded separately at the World Board Gaming Congress, and they cover your more kind of hardcore strategy and tactics games. So that having been said, the award for best board game at the show was given to Trains by Alderac Entertainment Group. Trains is a Japanese design. The designer's name is Hayashi. And train games are nothing new to the industry. There's a lot of train games that have come through and are some of the most popular games and award-winning games that have come out over the history of our industry have been about trains. Ticket to Ride is a recent example. Empire Builder is kind of an older one. But Trains is a deck-building game that comes with a board. And that's kind of the innovation. It follows, you know, kind of your Dominion deck-building style of constructing what you're going to run with. And then it adds a map, which is kind of a really cool innovation, and it allows for expanded play, not only with additional cards, but changing out the maps. And it was extremely well received by the Academy, and they honored it with the award this year, Trains by Alderac Entertainment Group, Best Board Game. The Best Card Game also went to Alderac Entertainment Group, and this is one that a lot of people were really pushing for, Love Letter by Seiji Kanai, another Japanese designer. The Japanese, I think these are the first Origins Awards given to Japanese designers, and they swept both card games and board games this year. If you haven't played Love Letter, it is a brilliant little game that plays on 15 cards. It's a numbers game. There's bluffing. It plays fast. The rules are super easy, and it's astounding how much strategy and replay you can get out of a game that only has a 15-card deck. Fantastic little game. It only runs $10 and is Alderac's best-selling game of all time. Now, it's really only been out for it's a little over a year. In that time, by unit sales, it's become their best-selling game and well-deserved also. Love Letter from Alderac Entertainment of winning card game. The best role-playing game award was given to Numenera by Monte Cook Games. And if you haven't looked at Numenera, it's a science fantasy role-playing game set probably on Earth in a billion years in the future. After all of these different epochs, these nine ages have passed, where there have been extinctions and alien invasions and rapid change to what the world is. And it's a really neat game. It starts at the beginning of this new age, so it has kind of like a post-apocalypse feel to it. At the same time, it's a sci-fi and fantasy game. It's got a really, really neat background. The title Numenera refers to this, it's almost like a data cloud that some people have the ability to kind of tap into, and that gives them effects that would be akin to magic in a fantasy setting.
I've got a question, Brian.
Okay.
The lore has immediately sucked me in, and I have to interrupt with a question. Is that data cloud some remnant of a technological past before everything went haywire?
Yes. Yes.
Ah, it's
something that kind of goes back, you know, into a previous age. It's really neat. If I guess the closing segment of the old heavy metal cartoon from the 80s is a really good kind of analogy, but there's tons of things. If you can think science fantasy with like a little bit of that post-apocalypse stuff thrown in there, really just crazy, outrageous monsters and races and aliens. You know, if an alien race had invaded, you know, 300 million years earlier, they'd consider themselves indigenous to the world, and you know, they're part of the world. So it's a really, really neat background. The game plays, it feels in a lot of ways like a D20-based role-playing game. It feels a bit like D&D. It's kind of a little dungeon crawly. The mechanics are a little backwards, but one of the When I say backwards, I mean they function in reverse, which it's hard to describe until you actually get to play it. But one of the really neat things about the game is the character generation in the game is done by creating a descriptive sentence about your character. So when you're figuring out what you're going to play, you would basically pick one of the three professions. There's like a martial character and a spellcasty techie type character, and then like a kind of a jack of all trades. You pick an adjective to describe them, and you pick kind of a vocation as to what they do, which they call focus. And by looking at the keywords in that sentence, you know, I am a stealthy nano who howls at the moon. Those are all descriptive powers and enhancements that come out of the rules to fit your character. That's really kind of a neat idea. So yeah, Monte Cook Games won Best Role-Playing Game this year for Numenera, and it's worth a look. The system that runs Numenera is also going to power his new game, which is called The Strange, which is more of a kind of a science fiction, almost kind of horror type game that's coming out. I believe we're going to see it at this Gen Con. And in addition to the regular awards that were given out, kind of harkening back to the many procedural changes in the way that the awards have been done in the past, this is the very first year in many, many years that the award winners were chosen by the members of the Academy of Adventure Gaming Arts and Design. And Academy members are designers and publishers and company owners and layout people and graphics people and rules people and story people, people that work for distributors or for retail stores. So it's really all people that who make their livelihood, who their profession is in the games industry, that chose the winners this year. In previous years, the winners have been chosen by ballot. You may remember ages ago, they used to put the Origins Award ballot in Dragon Magazine and people would send it in. And in more recent years, the awards have been voted on by the attendees at Origins. And this year, so that we would not be taking the vote away from, you know, kind of Joe Gamer, who wants to, you know, let his voice be heard about which games he thinks are really cool, we included a fan favorite for every category. So they were voted on at the awards. So there were actually two awards given in each category. In many cases, the fan favorite award actually was in agreement with the Academy's choice. And in some cases, it was a little different, which was kind of cool because it meant more companies got to get awards, more products got to be seen and honored. And I really hope that we keep it that way going forward. I thought it was kind of cool.
That is cool. You give the industry insiders their weight. They're like the House of Lords or something, and then the House of Commons still has its say, so to speak. Not to say that we gamers are mere commoners or anything.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, the Oscars are given out by the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, and the People's Choice Awards are voted on by the public. And this is kind of a ceremony where we can give out an Oscar and a People's Choice Award kind of at the same time, which is kind of neat to have.
Very cool. Very democratic. I have a couple more questions, Brian.
Sure.
That last RPG, Numenera, sounded really intriguing. Are those adjectives part of the game? I mean, do you pick from a list of adjectives?
There's a list, a long list of adjectives that you can pick, and an even longer list of foci that describe what your character's powers would be. So the main adjectives, the descriptors, I think is what they're called, are mostly things like stealthy or swift or strong or clever. And those actually give you bonuses to abilities and your attributes to make it so that you're kind of better in that regard. And there's a whole lot of them. So like quick and swift, I think, are both in there. They are slightly different from each other. And like I said, there's tons of foci, and in the supplemental books that are coming out to support it, there's going to be a lot more options available to make characters with, too. So that's kind of exciting. I should also point out that the fan favorite for Best RPG this year was the 5th edition of Shadowrun, which is also spectacular. It's really, really fantastic game in terms of production values and background and just the way that it's put together. And I'm told by the people that have picked it up here in the shop, which, you know, we've sold quite a few copies of Shadowrun 5, that the changes over previous editions make it a much better game, a lot more fun, especially when it comes to things like The Matrix and character creation.
Was that one of two best RPG choices by the fans?
The Numenera would have been the Origins Award winner, and the fan favorite would have been Shadowrun 5th Edition.
Oh, I misheard you. Okay, I thought there were two fan favorites, but no, there is one for each category. Okay, so let's continue down the list. I'd like to know what else won.
Okay, so for both Love Letter and Trains, the fans agreed with the Academy, and they chose those as the best card game and board games, respectively. The best family party or children's game was Three Little Pigs by Yellow, and that's a neat little game. I have not had a chance to play it. It looks really cool. It the box is like a storybook, and Yellow, of course, is a new company. They're from France, and I guess their best-selling game right now, the game that you guys might be familiar with, is King of Tokyo, the Richard Garfield design about kaiju monsters trashing Tokyo, for which there will be a sequel coming out pretty soon called King of New York. But Three Little Pigs is their children's game, their family game, and it won the award for best family party or children's game. The fan favorite in that category was Walk the Plank from Mayfair, which is a little piratey game. The miniatures awards are actually split up. They do separate awards for the historical category. It's kind of, I guess, goes back to a compromise when they were trying to help out the Charles Roberts people to include and keep, since the basis of the awards was in historical games, to kind of keep that lineage going. So there are awards for historical miniatures and historical board games, as well as for the non-historical game category. So the best board game that I gave you as Trains is different from the best historical board game, which this year was won by Academy Games, 1775. And I'll try to get to the others here. Okay, for miniatures, the best historical miniatures rules were given to Fields of Fire from Proving Grounds. The best historical miniatures line, I want to say, was given to one of the Flames of War. Yes, Fate of a Nation, Arab-Israeli Wars from Battlefront Miniatures was to the Flames of War miniatures game. The best non-historical miniature rules were given to Avengers versus X-Men Heroclix, and the best miniature line was given to the Guild's Last Judgment for Malifaux from Weird Miniatures. And the historical miniatures, as I said, that was Fate of a Nation. And I guess, we can kind of get into the weeds. There are a lot of categories. Not all of them get as much attention paid to them. There's an accessory category. There used to be a play-by-mail category, because that actually used to have a significant number of people that actually played games by mail, but it was not included this year. But I think something that's really notable is that the award for best game-related publication went to Tabletop, and it also won the fan favorite award, obviously. And Bo Radakovich, who's the producer on the show, was on hand to accept the award for Will Wheaton and Felicia Day. And of course, Tabletop won the Diana Jones Award at Gen Con last year. So it was really cool to see them get honored at Origins, where they were guests just a couple of years ago, which is really, really great to see. Because when they came to Origins to promote Tabletop, it was still kind of in its infancy, and of course it just exploded. And now we're waiting on to see what they're going to do with their third season, which is being done outside of the YouTube umbrella that they have been operating under for the last couple of years.
Yeah, it's hard to argue that that show has not had tremendous positive influence on gaming in general. And I can't believe that I don't know this off the top of my head, but were they able to meet their goals as far as funding to break out and do their own thing?
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. They met their goals. They exceeded them. I forget exactly how much, but they did exceed their goals. They ran an Indiegogo crowdfunding campaign as opposed to Kickstarter, because in the Indiegogo platform, if you fail to meet the goal that you make, you still get what was pledged. And on a Kickstarter, that's not the case. On a Kickstarter, you have to meet your goal in order to get your goal in order to get any of it. And for Indiegogo, you actually get whatever gets pledged. But they met their goal. They exceeded it. And one of the stretch goals that Will had put in there was that if they got to a certain amount, he was going to do a role-playing game version of Tabletop So it's got a lot of people in the industry really excited to see what he's going to do there.
Interesting.
So those are the awards. And, you know, that's really only an hour out of the show.
Let me ask you this, about a couple questions about the awards. For starters, what was the name of the host again?
The host of this year's ceremony was Elena Huffman. Okay. She's an actress, and she's been on a lot of kind of geek culture-related shows. Currently, she's a regular on Supernatural.
And she was better or worse or about the same as compared to, and I think I remember this right, Kevin Sorbo.
Well, you know, I don't like to go and make comparisons. I can say, I think I can quote Amanda Valentine here, that in her hosting, and she had a really tough time, as would anybody hosting that ceremony, because so many of our games now come from all over the world. So she had to deal with Japanese names and Russian names and Polish names and French names, and she struggled through it admirably and did a really good job, I thought. Nothing disparaging about games or geek culture or anything else were said at this year's ceremony, and I consider that to be an improvement. Although I would like to see in the coming years, and I would like to see a host from the industry that kind of has a more intimate knowledge of the products coming out and the companies and the people involved. We've had that in the past, and I'd like to see us kind of go back to that on a more regular basis. It's nice to have the celebrity come in, but I would like to see, especially since we're going back to this Academy-based format for judging, that we have a member of the Academy or somebody from the industry host. That would be kind of nice to see. Although she did a fantastic job.
I vote for Felicia Day as a bridge host.
Oh, yeah. I would love to have Felicia or Will here at Origins to do that. That would be a dream. And maybe at some point it'll happen. We'll see. But they're very busy. And right now, what I want them working on is making more episodes of Tabletop.
I concur. Brian, Eric, do you have questions for our guest? It sounds like he has more or less summarized the awards.
Actually, I had a comment for you and Brian, only because you know how I love to tie in stuff to prior episodes. And unfortunately, I was unable to be on last week's episode, but I did have the pleasure of editing it.
Yes.
Right. So just to come at you, because you know you seemed a little bit in the dark about Elena Huffman, but I do remember you guys discussing last week the Gotham TV series and how all these other characters may get injected. She was on Smallville. She was the Black Canary. So she was one of those injected DC Universe characters into a show, which is something you guys discussed last week. I don't really recall any of the episodes she was on, and I know I watched them, so I may have to go back and check them out now.
Wow, an incidental tie-in to last week's episode. Well,
yeah,
done, Eric.
Completely incidental, and I know I'm good at that, but I had to do it.
Nice. Brian, you got any follow-ups on that one?
Just to say that, she's beautiful. And, she's tall. She's probably close to 6 feet tall and very well-spoken. Obviously, you know, a very intelligent woman. And, I guess that's why she's a Hollywood actress, because she's very talented.
Those attributes help. If she was playing a role-playing game, those would be the adjectives she'd want to choose in order to pick a Hollywood actress character.
Yeah, her Numenera character would be an intelligent actress who hosts award ceremonies.
Exactly.
And you weren't kidding when you say that she's done a lot in the kind of, well, I guess I'll call it the geek or nerd genre, because, I mean, Supernatural, Alphas, Stargate Universe, Smallville. I mean, there's a lot. So now I kind of want to go check out some of those episodes.
I might do the same, Eric. I've never given that show a chance, so I probably should. I won't get into it. Listen to last week's episode if you want to know my position on prequels and side stories.
I know how much you love them. I will say also, I mean, because I feel like I'm leaving it out, but there are a lot of games there that sound amazing that I'm really looking forward to playing, specifically the card games.
Yeah. So that reminds me of a couple more questions I could ask. The winner for Best Card Game, both fan and Academy, was Love Letter. And both that and Trains, which were put out by the same company, were made by Japanese game designers.
Yes.
Are Japanese game designers atypical? Or are they new to the scene? Or have they always been part of the mix?
Well, you know, the types of games that we've been, that have kind of exploded over the last 10 years, you know, have been given the moniker Euro games, because by and large the designs have been coming out of Europe, specifically Germany, and some from Italy and Spain, and a lot of U.S. companies have been going over to Essen and Lucca and some of the other big European game conventions looking for designs that they could obtain the U.S. or English rights to and bring them over here so that they could publish them and make some money on them. And John Zinsser actually told this story of how he came across getting some of these Japanese designs when he was at the Gamma Trade Show. He said that a mutual friend of ours, Zev Schlesinger, who was the man that started Z-Man Games, told him that he should check out the gaming scene in Japan, that there was a lot of really neat stuff coming up out of Japan. Most of the companies that are producing games in the industry now are having a lot of their production being done in China, which, you know, that's not unique to our industry. It's happening all over the place. And John had scheduled a trip to go out to China to look at some of his production out there for some of his other games, and he scheduled a side trip to go into Japan. He said he was taken to a game convention, and he said it was very different from a U.S. game convention where you'd have like this one really big hall, or even Essen where you'd have this gigantic hall that is separated out into these large areas where people are playing games, and it's noisy, and you've got to track down and talk to people. He said that the Japanese convention that he went to was separated out almost like office cubicles, these little tiny little areas. And he said everyone was very polite. He was taken by one booth after another, and people would show them the games that they had. He would take some time, sit down one-on-one with the designer and go through game by game and then move on to the next designer. And he said that when he saw Love Letter, that, you know, he knew immediately that he had to get the rights to it right away. And it turns out his instincts were dead on.
Well, good. It's good to know that there's now a new niche of gaming that we here at the Nerdtravaganza can capture. We can start our own Japanese gaming night.
I would very much expect to see a bunch more designs coming in from Japan. Love Letter especially, at least the Seiji Kanai designs, I guess, tend to all be, or not all, but they tend, at least what we've seen of it so far, they seem to be, they're going to be micro games. They're going to be games that don't have a whole lot of components but have a tremendous amount of replayability and strategy. And not having a lot of components means they're not going to be terribly expensive. So Alderac Entertainment Group is launching a whole line. There's something we're calling 5-Minute Fun. You learn the rules in 5 minutes. You can play, like, forever, of micro games that cost $10 or $20. And the flagship of that is going to be these Japanese games that are coming over. Trains, though, is not a small design. It's a big design and apparently quite good. I'm going to be trying it out at our next Games Day. But that's the awards. I did see a lot of games out on the exhibit hall floor in the time that I had to walk around. I didn't get to see everything, but I took some demos. There was a bunch of new stuff that was debuting at the show. And owing to the rise in crowdfunding, there was a lot of projects that were out there. There were companies that were showing off prototypes for games that were going to be going into a crowdfunding cycle so that they could get feedback and show off the game and do a little kind of advanced marketing and research. One of those games that I saw was called Baker Street. It's a Sherlock Holmes role-playing game set, obviously, in Victorian Britain. And I guess the idea is that, I guess, Holmes is, like, away for a while. He's, like, kind of gone off on his mission that he's doing. And the player characters are investigators that are going to be working for Dr. Watson and being sent out to do various investigations and tasks that he's going to set out for them. That looked really neat. And that's going to be coming in October, I think they said. It was going to go into their production, I think. Something like October. Baker Street is what that's called. I played another one called Folklore the Affliction, which is kind of a difficult title, but it's a neat game. It's a adventure-style fantasy game. I think somewhere along the lines of Legend of Andor, you have a party of adventurers that you travel on a big map as you're going from place to place, and as you encounter different areas in the map, you have other, like, kind of tactical map boards that come out that you can play on, and you can do very role-playing style adventures where you know somebody needs help and you go and rescue them, or monster needs to be killed, or it's got a random element to it. It was kind of fun. It's got some really neat figures that are going to be coming out for it. Folklore of the Affliction, that's new.
And what exactly is weird about that title? Because I loved it.
I don't know the how it. Are you afflicted with the folklore? Is it like something that's like debilitating? Yeah, I don't know. The title sounds to me like, you know, like something that the guys at White Wolf, as they were like considering name designs for some of the role playing games, would have like looked at that one and said, okay, it's close, but no, I don't think we're going to use it.
I don't know. I like it. I just think it opens up the door for folklore, the, I don't know, the something else, and so on. I, you know.
But definitely an interesting game. I think that they got a few more nuts and bolts to work out, but graphics are really pretty, and it was fun to play. Other things that are coming up, I got to play Pairs, which is a pub game by James Ernest, who you would know from Cheap Ass Games and tons and tons and tons of other stuff. He's come up with Pairs, which is a game similar mechanically, I guess, to Blackjack. I guess would be the closest way to describe it. It's a really, really neat game, and it will do very well at game nights and quick demo type games. Very cool game. It's an elimination game. One person loses every hand, and the object is not to get to 21. It's a neat little game. I when you guys come down for the next game day, I'll kind of show you how it plays, but it's pretty cool. Pairs. And one of the neat things about Pairs, it funded earlier this year, I think back in February, and the base deck for Pairs, the artwork on the cards is like fruits and vegetables, and that's kind of the base game. But there are, I think, about a dozen other decks whose artwork are all being done by different kind of guest artists. John Kovalik is doing a deck. The amazing Art Nouveau artist Echo Chernik is doing a deck. And each one of these decks, in addition to having variant art, is going to include a game variant that changes the way the game plays, which is kind of cool because I enjoy the game so much, I may actually wind up buying like a dozen decks for it just so I can get all of the variants for it and all of the art. Very cool game, Pairs.
Yeah, cool collectible sort of spin on that as well, it sounds like.
Yeah, I guess, you know, the individual decks, I guess we could consider them collectible. I also played Golem Arcana, which you may have heard a little bit about. I had seen it demoed at Gen Con last year, but the first time I actually got a chance to play it was here at Origins. Golem Arcana is Jordan Weissman's new game. Jordan is the fellow who invented Battletech and Mage Knight and HeroClix. And Golem Arcana is a miniature combat game, I think very much in the style of Battletech, although it's a fantasy game. Instead of giant robots, there are giant metal golems. Instead of being piloted by mech warriors, they're being ridden by little creatures who are kind of urging them on to get them to do things. And the neat thing about the game is the engine that runs the game, the randomization, the reference, all of that is in electronic form. The game runs over a smart device, either a phone or a tablet. And in addition to the pieces and the board, you have this really cool pen, this stylus, that has a lens in the tip that when you press it to the board or the reference cards or to the figures themselves, reads these tiny little QR codes that are embedded invisibly into the images and tells the game where everything is. It tells the person playing the game what their movement options are, what their attack options are. It calculates all of the damage. There's graphics, really cool video game style graphics that let you fight this stuff out. Very neat game. And when I'd seen it demoed at Gen Con last year, I was a little skeptical because my first thought was, well, you know, is this really any faster than rolling dice and marking down damage on a card? And I don't believe, having actually played it, that it's necessarily faster, but it is really immersive and very cool. You can sit there with a pen and click through all your options and see all the things that are going on there. And one of the neat things that the game does that you don't get out of a regular Battletech game is that it can see these other little elements into itself as you're playing. So you can find like Easter eggs on boards. So in addition to being just a straight-up combat game between my golems and your golems and the golems of my faction versus the golems of your faction, You know, you might stumble across like a wizard hermit that lives somewhere on the board, and he's like, "Hey, I know you guys are having a fight, but I really need these three things. Can you run around and get them for me?" And at that point, the game ceases to become a battle and becomes kind of more of a race to collect these things. And I thought that was really kind of cool. I'm going to have to upgrade my tablet to something that'll run Android 4.2 because that's the minimum that's required there. But it's all done through Bluetooth from the stylus to the device. And I thought that if I could get a tablet that had a nice HDMI out, I could broadcast it up onto our giant screen TV over our front gaming table, and we could do kind of arena fights and stuff like that. It would be kind of neat to see.
That would be cool. Yeah. And I
have to ask. I'm sorry, Tom. I don't mean to cut you off, but I got to ask if it's going to be iOS compatible as well.
Well, absolutely, absolutely. I think that was where they went first. But you know, I don't have Apple money, so.
Because I was going to say, as for my weekly Geekly, I just got a new iPad Air, and you could use the Apple TV to broadcast it without a cord, which would be kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. And you know, with the wireless HDMI, you could do the same thing coming off of the Android tablet. But yeah, it's really, really neat looking. Check it out, Golem Arcana, coming out later this year. I had already pre-ordered it, and I'm going to increase my orders. It's really neat.
Yeah, I have to say, of everything you've discussed, that's definitely the one that's piqued my interest the most so far. Not to say that everything else isn't interesting, but that one's got me really intrigued, and now I want to do research.
And, you know, Jordan Weissman's got just an extraordinary track record of amazing game designs. And this game plays a lot like Battletech. You know, the terrain gets in the way in a similar way. There's not heat like you have in Battletech, but your attack powers, if you overuse them, there's like a refresh that they have to like come back up online to be available again. Otherwise, they wind up costing you more action points to do. It's really a neat game. Very, very cool. And you know, there's a lot of kind of, you know, gamesmanship in the play of the game too, which is really appealing.
I got to say, I finally have a justification for owning my tablet, besides kind of being a redundant way to do a lot of things I otherwise would do on a PC or a gaming system.
It is really neat. Let's see. I also I did not get to play it, but Catalyst Game Labs was showing off Crossfire. Crossfire is the Shadowrun deck building game. A couple of years ago, when they were announcing that they were going to be like kind of revamping the entire Shadowrun line, they announced like a year of Shadowrun, which is now kind of, I think, bled into like a couple of years. But they were, the goal at the time that they'd said was they were not only going to do a new edition of Shadowrun, but they were going to introduce a Shadowrun branded game in every category and platform in the industry. So it wouldn't just be an RPG, but there'd be a computer game, there'd be a board game, a card game, a miniatures game, everything. And Crossfire is the next game after the RPG and the computer game to come out, and they were showing it off at their booth. It's a deck-building game. It is a firefight between gangers and corpse and stuff like that. It looked really cool. The graphics look great. And I'm going to get a chance to play it probably at Gen Con. I did not get a chance to play it at Origins. What I did get to play, card game-wise, kind of entirely by accident, is the Pathfinder Adventure card game, the new version of this coming out, which is the Skull and Shackles campaign. I had not actually played the Pathfinder Adventure card game that came out last year, the Rise of the Rune Lords campaign. I hadn't played it yet, although we had sold quite a bit of it here. We had a lot of people here that were playing, and they kind of thoroughly enjoyed it. I was kind of enjoying walking around Origins and trying out these new games with a former customer of ours here who had moved away. And we kind of hooked back up at Origins, and we're checking out some new stuff. And he's a Pathfinder player, and we were looking at the Paizo booth in the supported play hall. And we walked by the tables there, and Mike Selinker, who is an industry friend of mine, who was also the designer of the Pathfinder Adventure card game, was like, "Hey, Brian, do you want to sit down with us and play a game?" He was sitting there with Mike Webb, who is the Vice President of Marketing for Alliance Game Distribution, we serve on the Gamma board together. And I was like, "Well, I don't know, because I'm with somebody else. You know, can my friend, you know, join us to play?" He was like, "Sure, sure." So I went over and asked my friend, "Hey, you know, I know you've played this game before, but would you like to play a game with the designer?" He was like, "Oh, that would be really cool." So we went over, we sat down. So with three mics at the table, my friend Mike Selinker, Mike Webb, and myself, sitting down deciding whether we're going to play the new version, the old version, just to kind of give us a feel for teaching the game. And John Kovalik comes over and sits down with us. You may know John from all of the artwork from Munchkin and Apples to Apples. He's an award-winning illustrator and comic book strip artist and just all-around super great industry guy. And he was our artist guest of honor at the show. And, you know, he and Mike know each other really well, and Mike Selinger know each other really well. So he came by, sat down, and so we get to play for my friend kind of a gaming celebrity version of the Pathfinder Adventure card game using the new Skull and Shackles expansion, which was kind of cool for him. He got some pictures out of it, and I get to learn how to play the game. And we're going to do it again at Gen Con.
With the same group of celebrities, or you're going to play it again at Gen Con in general?
With Mike Selinker. I'm going to try to get Mike Webb involved if we can. I don't know if John Kovalik is going to be available. My friend Mike from Texas is not going to be able to make it out to Gen Con, but we're going to try to play the game again, because the way that the game actually wound up coming out as we were playing it, it was really short. We were extremely fortunate in the way that the cards came out. We had everything that we needed, and Mike Selinker was incredibly distraught. He said, "This is a terrible demo. This game is supposed to be challenging." In the end, I think in retrospect, we're looking back on it, he was like, "You know what? I should have just, you know, changed the cards that were coming out there." Because he shuffled the deck, but it just came out in a way that we were done in maybe 20 minutes. And it's supposed to go a lot longer than that. But I got to learn the game. It was really neat. And there's some new mechanics that are in this edition that now I'm kind of privy to, that people that know the current game aren't aware of. So there's rules for ships and ship-to-ship combat. Skull and Shackles is a piratey-themed adventure path, so there's a lot of, you know, kind of piratey stuff in this expansion, and it's a really neat little game, and I believe it's going to be coming out at Gen Con, so very soon, about 6 weeks, 50 days I think it is, to Gen Con.
Awesome. That does sound like another cool game. I don't know that any of my experiences will be quite as celebrity laden, but does sound like something I wouldn't mind trying.
Well, that's actually one of the cool things about going to some of these big conventions, is a lot of times you can meet the designers, a lot of times you can play games with the designers and with other industry people, because the industry is so inclusive and really, you know, kind of small that you do get access to the people that make the games and publish the games when you go to these conventions. You don't have to be a game store owner or on the board of Gamma to play games with these guys. Just, you know, come out to one of the shows.
Okay, Nerdstravaganza Eric and Brian, do you have any other questions?
That was really, really informative. So it's not that I have questions. I have more just interest. Like, there's so much that I honestly, while you're sitting here discussing things, I'm like quickly typing things in and trying to like research topics as we go, because there's just so much information to digest. And I'm excited. There's a lot of cool stuff in there.
Well, I guess, you know, we talked about guests of honor, right? So we know John Kovalik was our artist guest of honor. We know that we had Elena Huffman was our media guest of honor. Our author guest of honor was Tracy Hickman.
Who you guys met?
Yes, yes. Tracy was at Origins this year, and it was kind of cool because the big event that Tracy does at Gen Con every year is the Killer Breakfast, and we actually were able to have the Killer Breakfast at Origins a little early this year, which was kind of cool. And he was there demoing his new game with his wife, and they looked like they had a really great time. And we also had our other author that was there, of kind of celebrity status, was Timothy Zahn, the Star Wars author, who's actually come out the last few years. He was our author guest of honor a few years ago and liked the show so much he's been coming back every year. So that was really kind of nice to see. A very kind of industry-oriented guests. And one of the cool things is our author guest of honor, Tracy Hickman, and our artist guest of honor, John Kovalik, are also game designers. So that was really nice. So I guess we'll talk about some of the other things that happened at Origins. Origins is a really big show. It takes up the entire Columbus Convention Center, the Greater Columbus Convention Center in Ohio. We use just about every square foot of the convention hall and all of the surrounding hotels. And there's a lot of really cool things that happen there. Like I said, about half the games are tabletop games, board games, card games. There's a lot of role-playing, a lot of LARPs, probably 100 or so LARPs that go off at Origins every year for role-playing. There's a lot of organized play role-playing. Pathfinder Society is there in force. They're probably the biggest RPG component that's there. This year, Jason Bowman, who is the creative director at Paizo Publishing, and Eric Mona, who is the publisher at Paizo Publishing, were both at Origins running games and, you know, helping out and playing in games. So one of the features of Origins that we have is called Upgraded Play, which I kind of had by accident with my Pathfinder card game. But we have, as an official program in Origins, if you sign up for a game at the show, we pick throughout the show different games at random where we move your game into a kind of a private space, and one of our guests gets to come and sit and play with you. So you might play the game that you signed up for with the person that designed it, or with an actor that you like, or a writer, or an artist, or a game designer that you're a big fan of. And that's a kind of neat thing we do called Upgraded Play.
I think you should institute that in the Dragon's Lair, Brian, for those of us who are regular attendees in that gaming space.
If I could get some of these guys to come all the way down here, I would definitely do it. I've talked to a few guys. I've talked to, I don't want to mention any names. I don't want to commit anybody. But I've talked to some people I know in the industry that would not mind coming down to Florida in the winter. And if we're able to organize something like that, we will do a signing and games with designers and that kind of thing. We do have a couple of local designers that I'm trying to get to come out here and do some stuff like that with, too. And those names I'll mention. We've got Justin Jacobson, who's a local RPG designer, and Lewis Porter Jr., who's a local game designer of RPGs, that we're trying to get to come by the shop a little bit more often and maybe even run some games or sit in on some games that we're running. Other things that we did at Origins. You guys know Geek Chic, the game table people?
I believe I saw them at PAX. They make the really nice gaming.
Yeah, they do. They make the really super amazing game tables. The table that that they use on the tabletop show is a Geek Chic table. At Origins, Geek Chic is given a private dining room adjacent to the main hotel bar, which they outfit with all of their different table models. And attendees can come in and basically play games on some of these tables that cost, you know, $15,000, $20,000. Or I don't know if they're necessarily quite that high. I think the biggest ones are up in that range. But there are many thousands of dollars worth of amazing tables that you can play on while you're there. And they sort of set up a whole room for them. And in the main bar every night, Mike Selinker, James Ernest do a podcast, which has been called Lone Shark Live, Origins After Dark. And they would bring in different kind of industry celebrities, designers, and other cool people to come in and interview. We had a lot of news coverage this year. We had all the local affiliates for Columbus, for ABC, Fox, NBC, Viacom, all came out. And there's a very real possibility that Viacom might have like a presence at the show next year for the whole show, or at least for multiple days, which could be really cool. We're hoping for that. This was the 39th Origins. Next year will be the 40th Origins, so we're expecting a big bump in attendance just for that. The theme this year was monsters. So since I do a bunch of the graphics work and design for Gamma and for Origins, I got to pick out kind of a mascot for the show, and he kind of caught on. He's this crazy little orange Jim Henson-type creature that the result of a Facebook voting contest named him Crit. And I'll send you guys some pictures of Crit so you can see this like kind of crazy open mouth fang tooth monster that is the new Origins mascot. Other stuff that I saw. Well, the exhibit hall was just full of games that have been released, games that have only recently just come out, prototype games, things that I brought back with me. How about that? Things I brought back with me, things that I thought were worth my dollar to bring back. I always am on the lookout for things that I think I probably won't have a shot at getting as a store either ever or with any ease. So things that I think are going to take a while before they come into the distribution chain, or things that maybe my distributors aren't going to carry, I try to keep an eye out for. And lately, that has been role-playing games from small publishers, and I bought a few of those. And I'm kind of going through my stack here. This is all stuff that I've yet to try, so I can't really give you a full opinion on them yet. I can just tell you what I was told. I brought back from Silverback Press, which is Darren Watts' company, Darren Watts was one of the owners at Hero Games, and he helps organize the panels for Metatopia, the design conference that I go to in the fall. He has produced a live-action role-playing rule set for Champions that uses a stopwatch to generate random numbers so that you can do fights and combats and stuff like that. And that rule system is being adapted to other genres. Paradigm Concepts, local game design company, is adapting it for their Witch Hunter game to do live action rules for that. So Champions live action role playing game is one of the ones I brought back. I brought back Durance. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. It's Jason Morningstar's new game. Jason Morningstar is the guy who designed Fiasco. And Durance is his new RPG. It's a prison planet RPG. The back of the book says, Durance the Prison Planet, Savagery, Servility, Power, and Control. On a remote planet far from civilization, the worst criminal scum from a dozen star systems have been dumped, charged with building new lives under the watchful eye of the authority. With a brutal hierarchy of savagery and servility, convicts and guards alike must make hard choices. So it's a really cool-looking indie RPG. I know it's going to get a lot of attention because it's Jason Morningstar and because, you know, Fiasco was so amazing, and this looks really cool. It comes with a deck of cards, which seems to be kind of a trend. A lot of the games that I brought back with me, role-playing games, small role-playing games, come with a deck of cards attached. So I brought back Durance. I brought back for Fate a Fate setting called Omega Zone, which is a very gamma worldy post-apocalypse mutant-ridden setting for Fate that also comes with a deck of cards. And this was very highly recommended from the folks over at the Game Developers Independent Game Developers Network booth where I got it. I also got from my friend Jason Pitt, Posthuman Pathways, a role-playing game of transhumanism, sacrifice, and transformation. Jason's company is Genesis of Legend Publishing. I met him at Metatopia a couple of years ago, and we've kept in touch. He did the Spark RPG that we have on the shelf that's been pretty well received, and I brought back that, Posthuman Pathways. And I brought back from Luke Crane, who is the designer of the Burning Wheel RPG and the Mouse Guard RPG. He is also the person pretty much in charge of crowdfunded game projects at Kickstarter. He has a new role-playing game called Torchbearer. Torchbearer, from the best that I can look at, it's a hardcover book, so that way it's not terribly indie-looking. It looks very kind of old-school Renaissance. It looks like kind of a throwback to, like, first-edition D&D fantasy, but I'm sure that with Luke there's going to be some real indie touches to it. And it includes a deck of cards to go with it, a player's deck. So it's going to be interesting to see how these decks of cards kind of mesh with the different role-playing games that they're set with. I brought back an adventure for Hackmaster Basic that I had Jolly Blackburn and Steve Johansson sign for me, which is kind of cool. Another thing you get when you go to these conventions, not only do you get to talk to the game designers and sometimes play games with the game designers, take demos with them, but you can get their signatures on stuff, which is always kind of cool. I brought back, this is one of the reasons why I was really excited about going up there, I brought back the beta edition of the Deluxe Tunnels and Trolls core rules. Ken St. Andre had been working on these for a very long time. It's overdue by like a year from the Kickstarter, and it's something that I was really waiting for with bated breath because I really like the Tunnels and Trolls system. And if I were to do any design work, which is something that I've certainly been contemplating for the last couple of years, this is the system that I would want to base it on because I think it's very elegant and fast and really cool. And again, it's actually been in limited distribution for a little while. That was really well received, that I picked up because it was one of the last remaining copies available for sale, I was told, anywhere by the designer. Star Realms, a sci-fi deck-building game from White Wizard Games, a new company. They were showing this off at the Gamma Trade Show and got a lot of attention for it. I didn't get a chance to play it. And then I talked to the designer a little bit at Origins and picked up a display of games. It's a compact game. It's a two-player deck-building sci-fi space combat game that's $15. So it's very easy to get into it. There's not a high barrier to come in and play because it's only $15 to come into it. I'm told it's really good. And if you've got multiple decks, you can increase the number of people to play. And supposedly that it very seamlessly goes from 2 to 4 players. So I'm anxious to give that a shot. Supposedly it plays pretty fast, about 20 minutes to play. In a neat little game. I've got a couple of copies left if anybody has an interest. Look it up, Star Realms from White Wizard Games. And that's about what I could afford to bring back, apart from an enormous quantity of dice. I brought back hundreds and hundreds of dollars worth of dice from several of the various dice manufacturers that we deal with, Chessex, Coplow, and Crystal Cast among them. And I have some really cool dice designs that are not going to be available in the general realm for purchase at most stores for about another 3 or 4 months. So you'll get to see some of the new Chessex designs, which are really neat. And I brought back some of the Crystal Cast D20 Beach Balls, which are actual functional 20-sided dice that are inflatable and the size of a decent-sized beach ball.
Nice. I know you just basically piqued Brian, Nerdtravaganza Brian's interest when you mentioned dice. He is an avid collector bordering on a fetishist, I think. Is that fair to say, Brian?
I am not aroused by them. I just like them.
So he says.
I wish to draw that line.
And I was remiss. I didn't mention Q Workshop. I also brought back some Q Workshop dice. Q Workshop, of course, makes some fantastic and multi-Origins award-winning dice that we brought back as well. In fact, we gave away some really cool Q Workshop fudge dice at Free RPG Day last weekend.
I was lucky enough to get one of those, actually. Very nice.
So I guess, I mean, do you guys have any other questions about Origins? Or, I mean, that's kind of, I think I've about run out of gas on Origins.
Yeah, it sounds like you got quite a haul and that the show was very well attended and turned out well. The award ceremony, I really like the approach to the award ceremony where you've got two groups of people granting the awards. I'll follow on basically with what I probably asked you last year. Do you think the increase in attendance is continued evidence of an increased interest in gaming?
I think so. Although it's been noted, I think there's been a couple of articles that have been published in the last few months about how attendance at all conventions is up, and that they're attributing that, I think, in significant part to people that would not have been convention attendees until the last few years, when conventions, whether they be media conventions, costume conventions, anime conventions, have the awareness of them has like come in more to the forefront with the different media that's been covering them, and the fact that people like to come out for costumes. The Origins Costume Contest, which is a new thing, we've only really been doing costume contests at Origins for 2 years now, had 3 times as many people as we expected, and 5 times as many people as that attended it last year. So, I mean, there's definitely an interest in it. I think one thing I can say that kind of sets Origins apart from a lot of other shows is Origins is very much a players' convention. So you're not going to see, like, tremendously big events or parties or things that are not a game. Origins is very much focused on games and gameplay. The people that come out to Origins play games the whole time that they're there. That's why they're there. And the fact that we saw our attendance drive up as much as it did, and just, you know, looking around the show and seeing that, you know, it felt very much like an Origins in that everybody was there to play. So I think there's definitely a big component to the show where we have increased attendance, and it's people that are actually playing the games, as opposed to, you know, people just coming in to look around or shop, buy a costume, buy a sword, which maybe you'd get at some conventions that aren't necessarily as focused on gaming as like an Origins or a Gen Con. So that was really heartening to see, and I think we're going to see some more of that next year, especially the 40th anniversary. We're going to see a big upswing for that. Some people maybe haven't been out in a while are going to come out, and we are, for our part, working for the association running the show, we're going to do everything we can to try to continue to improve the show, and especially the awards, which, you know, for as much as we made some strides this year to improve the process behind the scenes, there's a lot more that still needs to get done, and we're going to be working very hard to try to improve the coming year. And I think next year's Origins is going to be a record setter. I think that we stand a really good chance of drawing record attendance and just having a lot of really cool stuff going on at the show. Very much looking forward to next year. I came out of this show very energized for going into next year's Origins.
Sounds like it, and I am glad to hear that. I will ask you this. Was there a big podcaster attendance there? Were there a lot of podcasts there reporting on the show?
Oh, yes, indeed. There were quite a lot of very big podcasters. The biggest one, I guess you'd probably say, would be the Dice Tower. Tom Vassell and his whole Dice Tower crew had a special section in our supported play hall where they were running what they were calling the summer preview. They had crews of people going around from booth to booth, talking to as many game designers and publishers as they could to try to get demos on video that they could turn around and put out as content for their podcast. But they weren't the only ones. There were many, many, many others that were doing coverage of the show, bloggers, press, podcasters, the whole gamut, and you know, actual mainstream media as well. We had, like I said, ABC, NBC, Fox, CBS were all there, and the CW came out too, largely because of Elena Huffman being there, and she, you know, she's on one of their shows.
I'm furiously taking down notes. Our show notes are going to be rich and varied this time around, which is a testament to how great an interview this has been. Yeah, I'm glad. It's encouraging to hear that there's a lot of media coverage as well, and that podcasting exists as a semi-viable means of expression, and that our fellow podcasters, especially well-known podcasters like the Dice Tower, are in attendance. With that said, I think we've got a pretty decent interview wrapped up here. Do you guys have any more questions for Brian?
I only had one, and it's way off the beaten path, because Tom, you did a great job with the interview, basically asking the questions, and honestly, Brian, I think you answered everything before we even had a chance to ask it, because it was so informative. My one question, and this is probably way off the gaming path, is Timothy Zahn was one of your guests.
Yes.
And I couldn't honestly think of a better guest to have at a better time, considering Disney's recent decision regarding the expanded universe. So I have to know if he said anything regarding his take on that decision. He's pretty much single-handedly responsible for it.
We actually have had this year and in years past a slate of Expanded Universe authors attending Origins. They actually run our author program, which we call the library. Mike Stackpole, who is on the Gamma Board of Directors, is one of the Star Wars authors and kind of like the instigator behind the whole library concept. And he brought Tim in, and one of the other Star Wars authors that had been with us for several years in the past, a gentleman with a rich background in the games industry as a designer and writer, Aaron Alston, who passed away regrettably this past winter, had long been a guest at Origins. And so we would usually have a very good assortment of Star Wars Expanded Universe authors at the show. And anytime you try to get information out of those guys about what's going to be happening, they are very tight-lipped. I'm sure they're bound by a ream of non-disclosure agreements about what they can talk about and what they can't say. And I'm sure that there are also a lot of stuff that they just don't know that you know, they're hoping for also. But I think based on, like you said, the stuff that we've seen, I think it's very encouraging that we're going to start to see a lot of really neat Expanded Universe stuff, and a lot of it coming from people that have ties to the game industry, which is really cool.
Yeah, it's you know, I know he did the Timothy Zahn did the Thrawn trilogy, which I think everyone who's actually been a fan of the Expanded Universe probably was hoping that was partly the direction these new movies would go. And then, of course, when they made the decision saying, oh, you know, the Expanded Universe is not really canon, I mean, I would just love to know what he has to say on the matter. Maybe we'll hear from him after the fact, but I mean, what a great guest to have considering the time frame.
Well, we're very proud to have him, and I'm hopeful that he'll be back again next year. And I know that Mike is going to be working hard to bring out some other great authors to come out next year as well for the 40th anniversary. Oh, and I guess I should mention, to plug our library panel, one of the things that we do at Origins every year is we're in our second or third year on this, is our – I think it's our third year – our authors, guests of honor, which we call our librarians, over the course of the year coming up into Origins, each write a short story centered around whatever the theme of the show is going to be. Next year's theme, in addition to being the 40th anniversary, is science fiction. So I think we're going to see some really cool stories come out. And all of those get compiled into an anthology, which debuts for sale at the show. And you can take it around to the various authors and have them sign it, which is really kind of cool. And it's a limited print run. They go through most of the copies at the show, and there's usually a small number available afterwards. And you can go, I think you can go on to the Origins website. I may be wrong about this, but certainly by going to Mike Stackpole's website or Tim Zahn's website, you see a link to the Origins anthology. This year it's called Monsters.
I will definitely have to check that out.
Sorry, guys, I'm scribbling down like billions of notes while we talk.
Oh, no. So, yeah, it's going to be endless, Tom. No.
Yeah.
I didn't even scratch the surface. I mean, there's tons of stuff that happens at this show that I haven't even talked about. And, you know, it's hard for me to kind of sort it all out through my head, because when we spend a year putting together each one of these, and every year we add more stuff. So it's a really great experience. If you get the chance to go to an Origins or to a Gen Con, you should do it at least once. You may find that after you've done it once that you're going to keep going back, because they're a ton of fun to do.
It does sound like a ton of fun, and I'm grateful for even this snapshot view that we got. This was a very rich interview, I think. I think I speak for all of us when I say that. This was even better than last year's interview with you, Brian, so I did not think that was possible, but you managed to top your performance last year, coming with even more information for me to spend hours and hours digging through post-show.
Well, thanks. I tried to not get stumped this year, so I did a little bit of preparation this year.
I feel stumped. There's just too much, and we don't have enough time to ask a billion and one questions. So hopefully our listeners will feel the same way and will appreciate this pretty in-depth interview and overview of Origins 2014. And with that said, unless there are any other final questions or concerns from my co-hosts, I think we will let you go. It's not to give a sackload of games to unpack in your store now.
Oh yeah, and you know, it was a really rough couple of weeks, because I had Origins, then I came back, and we had Free RPG Day, and I had a historical miniatures convention I was going to at the same time. So I don't remember where I was 2 weeks ago.
Well, we're glad you remembered to join us tonight, and we look forward to having you on the show again, and of course to seeing you in the Dragon's Lair at the Adventure Game Store in gorgeous tropical Davie, Florida.
Thanks again, guys. I really appreciate it.
Okay, so that concludes another excellent interview with Brian Dalrymple. Always a pleasure to have him on. I assume you guys agree.
Yeah, that was just an absurd amount of information, and in a good way. And I have like a lot of Googling ahead of me, just an absurd amount.
I'm always a little jealous after talking to Brian, though.
I am too. I think there's got to be a way we can somehow get ourselves to one of these conventions.
Yeah, you'd think, but how long has it been? 12 years experience seems to say it's harder than it sounds.
You know, the funny thing is, we go to every other kind of convention, but we don't go to probably the one type of convention we would most enjoy, you know?
I will say, the reason I don't go to a lot of gaming conventions is the only ones around here seem to be either Magic the Gathering or the historical stuff. And as much into wargaming as I am, the historical stuff's really heavy sometimes.
Yeah, you can get pretty bogged down in minutiae, which, I mean, I guess for a lot of people is the appeal. They want the historical accuracy. They want the rich detail that, for me, would just probably be a little overwhelming. Not to mention, I'm kind of a sci-fi fantasy buff. And as much as I like reading about history, I'm not sure I'm enough of a history fanatic to really appreciate the intricacy involved in that type of gaming. So any particular points Brian hit on that piqued your interest? I know the RPG he mentioned, Numenera, really piqued my interest, in addition to some of those early card games he was mentioning. And then there was, of course, that new game coming out from a creator with quite a reputation in the gaming industry that interfaces with a tablet. Eric, that fits in nicely with your new purchase, I guess.
I'm actually really excited about Golem Arcana. That game looks really killer. I regret not backing it now.
Yeah, everything I heard about that sounds fantastic. And as soon as he said, like, I would love to have a way to kind of broadcast it up onto a big TV, and I'm sitting here doing this with my Apple TV and my computer as we speak, it just sounded even better.
Yeah, what was your barrier to backing that, Brian? Was it too much money, or were the rewards not sufficient?
It was a little bit of a buy-in, and there were a lot of other stuff going on at the time. I just didn't think it was, God, I hate to say worth, but my budget was spent, so I couldn't bump something else for that.
Understandable. Well, it sounds like it's going to be commercially available in the not-too-distant future. I think he said fall of this year, was that correct?
Yeah, I think so. He's ordering it already, so soon.
Yeah, I'm interested in that. I am looking forward to checking it out. And I mentioned Numenera. Last year I mentioned the Star Wars role-playing game, and we never quite got that together. I really would like to get a pen and paper role-playing game of some type together with you guys. And something about that setting and the way you picked your character and everything just seemed really intriguing to me.
Having not played in so long, I mean, I've never played Numenera, but having not role-played in so long, some of the systems that they do nowadays are radically different, and they're so much more enjoyable. Like, you basically can just tell a story, share narrative. It's great. I liked Fate. I would totally give Numenera a try.
What about you, Eric? You want to jump into some pen and paper role-playing?
Absolutely. I'm down when you are. I actually miss our Star Wars get-togethers.
Yeah, we'll have to get something going. I'm in a pretty good area to seek out advice on games, so maybe I'll see if there's anybody in the local gaming scene here that plays Numenera and crash their party to see how it goes. I wouldn't mind getting that going. And you can ask Brian and Eric. I loved DMing when we were kids and we played D&D, and we were very much more into the storytelling aspects than the more intricate mechanical details. So that's a pretty fair characterization of our play style, isn't it, Brian?
We did not own miniatures. I think that speaks volumes.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. I mean, we were sitting around on a sofa with some dice between us and, you know, various unhealthy snacks. That was the extent of our equipment. And we had some great adventures, so would not mind getting in on some role-playing again. Man, I'm telling you, every time I talk to Brian in the store, and especially every time I do one of these interviews with him, I just get so excited about gaming, you know, non-video gaming, tabletop gaming, as it's now, I guess, known broadly. And just so much. I could go on and on for hours. That card game, what was it called? Romance? The first one he mentioned?
Love Letter?
Love Letter. That sounded intriguing. And the notion of this new crop of Japanese games coming over sounded intriguing, too.
I'd like to point out, not because, like, oh, I was in on it, but because, again, it's a lot harder to do things than we make it seem. I've been bringing Love Letter to every game night since the very first one. I'm dying to play that.
You've never showed it. I've never seen it.
Everybody thinks it's like a wimpy girl game. Oh, Love Letter, that's lame. I have to win the princess.
Wait. For near on 7 months now, we've had game night like every week religiously. And why do I not recall seeing this?
It's been in my box every single week.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, we have suffered through some real stinkers during game night from walk-on players bringing some stuff that has been really tough to swallow. And you had that the whole time?
Yep.
Brian, you got to speak up, man. I would totally have played that game. I don't remember refusing it.
I just enable. I don't guide.
Well, with me being in Seattle, that creates some problems for our playing in the near future, but I propose that you two get together and play Love Letter. And I know you're both secure enough in your sexuality to not take that the wrong way.
I'll play the pretty princess.
Eric, does Love Letter sound like something you would play on a game night?
Yeah, it was actually one of the highlights when he was when Brian was speaking earlier, because that one stood out just in its simplicity. And I actually even stopped real quick and went on Amazon to see if it was for sale. And I had no idea that it was already a game that's been out for a while, which, you know, I should have thought, because I'm a little slow on the draw apparently tonight, as soon as he said it was a fan, you know, favorite.
Duh, yeah, they voted on it, right.
But I didn't know if maybe fans, like, you know, at the con had a chance to say it and then the voting took place later, because I'm not that familiar with the con, to be honest with you. although I feel like I'm totally familiar with it now. But the point is, that was one of the ones that really piqued my interest. So I immediately got on Amazon. The game is $9 on Amazon. I already ordered it.
Nice, yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, it's so hard for me to keep track of all the entertainment that's out there in all the different areas of entertainment that I'm into, that I probably walk past 15 games at Brian's store all the time. And then when he tells me about them, it's new to me. So for all I know, that game could have debuted at Origins, you know. But be that as it may, I'm glad it's out. I'm glad it's been around. I'm glad it won awards. And I'm glad you ordered it. Brian already has it. And then I will be getting it. And I really want you guys on board with our super exclusive Japanese gaming night. So you have the Euro gamers. We're the Japan gamers. Only games originating in Japan will be played during our night.
We'll call it Hero Gaming.
Oh, I like it. Like the name Hero. Brilliant. Sorry to spell that one out to people, but I didn't want anybody to miss the humor in that, Brian. Hero Gaming with Nerd Extravaganza. I'm into it.
I'm not even commenting on that one. I'm going to leave that one completely alone.
A little close to the line.
Yeah, that one's right teetering on it.
It was up there on the line, but I don't think we were being offensive. I mean, it's a actual name of a person, of a Japanese person that sounds kind of like the word hero. That's all. We're leaving it at that. We're being respectful.
Changing one letter to an I. Yeah.
Yeah. And you won't find any bigger, I guess, proto-weeboos than Brian and I were back in the day. I think I'm not ashamed to admit that was the case in our youth, Brian. Are you?
No. I constantly talk about how these kids today can thank me for pretty much everything.
Yeah. So, all right. Look forward, everybody, to the Nerd Extravaganza Japanese Gaming Night, which may or may not have the name Hiro involved in it, depending on how offensive that is to the Japanese and Japanese Americans that we poll. I'm thinking it's going to border on offensive, so we may just ditch that name, but it should be fun either way. All right. Any other highlights, guys, or anything else you want to touch on from tonight's interview with Brian? I'll take that long silence as a no.
You know, I was kind of just thinking of what to say, but
No.
But I like where this went better.
No, did you have something else then, or no?
No, I really didn't. I was like, I'm going to be clever. No, I'm not.
Well, you still have a chance, because it's time for us to wrap things up with our usual round of promotional items, so you've got a few seconds to think of something clever. I'll go first with something not at all clever. Regardless of whether you are into Euro or Japanese games.
Come on. Do it.
Yeah, go ahead. You have my permission. Have at it.
Yes. Regardless of whether you're into Hero. Regardless of whether you are into Euro or Iro games, we invite you to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or whatever podcatching software you happen to use and rate it favorably. In addition, if you would rather listen to us on streaming, we are available on the excellent service known as Stitcher, which I want to give a little extra props to this episode because I've been using it heavily out here, discovering tons of new podcasts. Check out Stitcher. Check out our show.
And while you're at it, while you're checking things out, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Join us on Google+. Still don't know what to call that. And don't forget to check out the private group on Facebook, the Nerdstravaganza HQ.
You can drop us a line at nerdstravaganza@gmail.com, or without having to travel to Japan and make irritable comments, you can visit us at nerdstravaganza.com.
And with all that self-promotion out of the way, this Origins show has reached its terminus.